townspeople came to the center of downtown Meadows Creek to sell and trade their products. The smells of the fresh breads, the displays of the flowers, and the small-town gossip always made the journey worth it. Stephen and I had always come to the market to check out the fresh flowers, so when Friday came around with the fresh roses, I always stood in the middle of it all, breathing in the memories and breathing out the hurt. During my weekly trip to the farmer's market, I always noticed Tristan walking around. We hadn't spoken since he'd cut my grass, but I couldn't stop thinking about his sad eyes. I couldn't stop thinking about his wife and son. When had he lost them? And how long had Tristan been living his current nightmare? I wanted to know more. Sometimes I would see him walk out to the shed in his backyard, and he would stay there for hours. The only time he came out was when he would cut wood with his table saw, and then he would go back inside and stay hidden. Whenever he walked past me, my cheeks flushed, and I'd turn away as if I hadn't seen him, even though I had. I always saw him, and I wasn't exactly sure why. Everyone told me that he was callous, and I believed them. I'd seen the harsh realities that lived in Tristan, but I'd also seen another side of him that many didn't notice. I'd seen him fall apart when he learned that Zeus would be okay. I'd seen him slowly open up about the loss of his wife and son. I'd seen a gentle, broken side of Tristan that many seemed to miss. Currently, in the middle of the farmer's market, I was so intrigued by another side of Tristan. Each week, he would walk around as if he didn't see anyone. He was focused on his mission, which was always to buy bags of groceries and fresh flowers. Then he would disappear up the hills, stopping by the bridge where he always handed all the groceries and flowers to a homeless man. As he handed the bags off to the guy, I was only a few feet away from him because I was heading back to the house. As I approached him, I couldn't stop the smile that was overtaking me. He started walking in the direction of his house. "Hey, Tristan." He looked my way with a blank stare. He continued walking. It was as though he were back to day one. I hurried my footsteps to keep up with his long strides. "I just wanted to say that I thought that was really nice. It's really sweet what you do for that man. I think it's really..." He shot around and stepped toward me. His jaw clenched, and he narrowed his eyes.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?"
"What?" I stammered, confused by his tone. He stepped closer.
"You think I don't see the way you look at me?"
"What are you talking about?"
"I want to make something clear to you,"
he whispered harshly. Tristan blinked once before his stormy eyes reappeared.
"I don't want to be involved with you in any way, shape, or form. Okay? I cut your fucking grass because you annoyed the living shit out of me. That's all. I want nothing to do with you again, so stop with the damn looks."
You think I'm hitting on you?" I cried out as we reached the top of the hill. He cocked an eyebrow and gave me a "hell yes, I think you're hitting on me" look. "I thought it was nice, okay? You give the guy food, you prick. And I wasn't trying to ask you out or hit on you. I was trying to have a conversation with you."
"Why would you want to have a conversation with me?"
"I don't know," I said, my words somersaulting off my tongue. I was truly unsure why I would have wanted to be in a conversation with someone who was so hot and cold on a daily basis. One day, he was opening up about his demons, and the next, he was shouting at me for saying hello. I can't win. Stupid me for thinking we could have been friends. His eyebrows furrowed.
"Why would I want to be your friend?"
A shiver ran across my body. I wasn't sure if it was due to the light breeze or due to Tristan intruding on my personal space. "I don't know. Because you seem lonely, and I'm lonely, and I thought..."
"You didn't think."
"Why are you so mean?"
"Why are you always watching me?"
My lips parted to speak, but no reply came to mind. We stared at each other, so close that our bodies were almost linked, so close that our lips were almost touching.
"Everyone in this town is afraid of me. Do I scare you, Elizabeth?"
he whispered, his breath brushing against my lips. "No."
Why not?
Because I see you. The coldness in his stare softened for a split second, almost as if he was confused by those four words. But I did see him. I saw past the hate in his stare and noticed the hurt in his frown. I saw the broken parts that somehow matched my own. Without thought, Tristan pulled me to his body, his lips pressing hard against mine. The confusion swimming around in my head began to fade as his tongue slipped between my lips, and I kissed him back. I kissed him back, and maybe even kissed him more than he kissed me. God, I missed that. I missed kissing. The feeling of falling into someone who was holding you up from hitting rock bottom. The feeling of warmth washing against your skin as another person supplied you with your next few breaths. I missed being held. I missed being touched. I missed being wanted. I missed Stephen. Tristan's kisses were angry and sad, apologetic and agonizing, raw and authentic, just like mine. My tongue slid across his bottom lip, and I pressed my hands against his chest, feeling his rapid heartbeats flying through my fingertips, flying into my own body. For a few seconds, I felt like I had felt before, whole, complete, a part of something divine. Tristan hastily yanked his mouth away from mine and turned away, leading me back to my current dark reality. Broken, incomplete, lonely all the time.
"You don't know me, so stop acting like you do," he said.
He started walking again, leaving me standing, perplexed. What was that? "You felt it too, didn't you?" I asked, watching him walk away. It felt like they were still here. It felt like Stephen was here. Did it feel like your wife?" He turned with a fire burning in his stare.
"Don't ever speak about my wife as if you know anything about her or me."
He began to hurry away once again. He felt it. I knew he did.
You can't just walk away, Tristan. We can talk to each other. About them. We can help each other remember."
My biggest fear ever was the idea of forgetting. He kept walking. I hurried beside him once more. Besides, that's the point of becoming someone's friend. To get to know them. To have someone to talk to. My chest was rapidly rising and falling as I became more and more upset with him for walking away in the midst of our conversation. In the midst of the most painful and satisfying kiss my lips had ever experienced. He was helping me remember what it had been like to feel happy, and I hated him for walking away. I hated him for taking that small moment of lust that faintly reminded me of the love that had been taken away from me.
God, why do you have to be such a monster?
He turned to me, and a split second of misery tinged his eyes before his jaw and his facial expression hardened.
"I don't want you, Elizabeth."
He tossed his hands up in frustration and stepped toward me.
"I don't want anything to do with you."
He stepped closer. I stepped back.
"I don't want to talk to you about your fucking dead husband."
Another step closer.
"I don't want to tell you shit about my dead wife."
Step, step. Back, back.
"I don't want to touch you."
Closer. Backward.
"I don't want to kiss you."
Step.
"I don't want to lick you."
Back, back. Step, step.
"And I damn sure don't want to be your fucking friend, so leave me alone and just shut the hell up."
He hollered, standing over me, his voice rocketing from his mouth like a clap of thunder, making me jump with fright. As I took one final step backward, the heel of my shoe skidded over a rock, causing me to tumble down the hill. Every bump and thump was felt throughout my body the whole way down. Minus a few bruises and a ton of embarrassment, I was fine. Tristan was standing over me within an instant.
"Shit,"
he muttered.
"Are you okay? Here,"
he said, reaching his hand out to me. I refused his offer and stood on my own. His eyes were filled with concern, but I didn't care.
they would probably be filled with hate within a moment's time. Seconds before the fall, he had told me to shut up, so that was exactly what I'd do. I gave him exactly what he wanted. I limped back home in silence, not once looking his way, even though I could see his pathetic stare out of the corner of my eye.
"He pushed you down a hill?"
Faye shouted into the phone. The moment I'd returned from my interaction with Tristan, I'd called her. I needed my best friend to tell me that no matter what, I was right and Tristan was wrong, even if I had called him a monster.
"Well, not exactly. He yelled at me and I kind of tripped."
"After he kissed you?"
"Yes."
"Ugh, I hate him. I hate him so much." I nodded. "I hate him too." That was a lie, but I couldn't tell her my true thoughts about Tristan, about how he and I had so much in common. I couldn't tell anyone. I hardly even told myself.
"But since we are on the subject, tell me," Faye said, and I could almost see her grin through the phone. "Did he use tongue? Did he growl? Was he shirtless? Did he motorboat you? Did you touch his abs? Did you lick his sharp jaw? Is he the size of a horse? Did you giddy up? Did you find his Nemo? Did you grace his Frankie? Did you Justin his Timberlake?"
"I can't handle you," I snickered, but my mind was still thinking about the kiss and what it meant. Maybe it meant nothing, or perhaps everything. She sighed.
"Come on, give me something. I'm currently trying to get laid here, and this phone call is killing my vibe."
"What do you mean you're trying to get laid?" I gasped. "Faye, are you having sex right now?"
"What do you mean, like sex-sex?"
"Yes, sex-sex."
"Well, if you mean is there a penis currently sitting in my vagina, then yes. I guess you could semi-call that sex."
"Oh my God, Faye, why the hell would you answer the phone?"
Because chicks before dicks? Like, literally?"
She laughed. I gagged.
"Hi, Liz."
I heard Maddie cough in the background. Gag again.
"I put you on the work schedule for 30 hours next week."
"I'm hanging up."
"What? No, I have plenty of time right now."
"You're disturbing."
"Ow, stop, Maddie. I told you not to bite that."
Oh my fucking gosh. My best friend was a freak.
"Okay, baby cakes, I gotta get going. I think I'm bleeding. But as for you, at least find some time to meditate and clear your head."
"And by meditate, you mean tequila. Top shelf, burns in the belly, aids in bad decisions, tequila." That sounded about right.
Chapter 11. Tristan. April 3rd, 2014. 4 days until goodbye. I stood on my parents' back porch, staring at the pouring rain hammering against the swing set that Dad and I had built for Charlie. The tire swing swayed back and forth against the wooden frame. "How are you holding up?" Dad asked, walking outside to join me. Zeus followed behind him and found a place to sit and stay dry in the corner. I turned to Dad and stared at a face that resembled mine in almost every way, except that there were a few more years of age and wisdom in his eyes. I didn't reply to his question, but turned back to the rain.
"Your mom said you were having trouble writing the obituaries?" he asked. "I can help."
"I don't need your help," I growled lightly, my fingers forming fists, my nails digging into my hands. I hated how angry I felt each passing day. I hated how I blamed the people around me for the accident. I hated that I was becoming more cold each passing moment. "I don't need anyone."
"Son," he sighed, placing his hand on my shoulder. I pulled away.
"I just want to be alone."
His head lowered and he ran his fingers across the back of his neck. "Okay. Mom and I will be inside." A second later, he turned away and opened the screen door. "But Tristan, just because you want to be alone doesn't mean you are alone. Remember that. We're always here when you need us." I listened to the screen door slam and huffed at his words. "We are always here when you need us." The truth of the matter was always had an expiration date. Reaching into my back pocket, I pulled out the piece of paper I'd spent the past 3 hours staring at. I'd finished Jamie's obituary early that morning, but Charlie's was still blank in my hand, with only his name attached to it. How was I supposed to do it? How was I supposed to write his life story when his life hadn't even had a chance to begin? The rain began to slam against the paper and tears climbed into my eyes. I blinked a few times before shoving the paper back into my pocket. I wouldn't cry. Fuck the tears. My feet led me down the steps of the porch, and within seconds I was soaked from head to toe, becoming a part of the dark storm that was brewing. I needed air. I needed space. I needed to escape. I needed to run. I started running with no shoes, with no thought, and with no direction. Zeus began to run behind me. "Go home, Zeus!" I shouted toward the dog, who was just as soaking wet as I was. "Go away!" I hollered, wanting to be left alone. I ran faster, but he kept up. I pushed so much that my chest burned and breathing became a chore. I ran until my legs quit and my body fell to the ground. Lightning struck above us, painting the sky with its scars, and I began to sob uncontrollably. I wanted to be alone, but Zeus was right there. He kept up with my crazed mind. He was right beside me when I hit rock bottom, and he wasn't going to leave me. He was in my face, giving me kisses, giving me love, giving me himself to hold when I needed someone the most. "Okay," I sighed, tears still falling as I held him close to me. He whimpered, almost as if he too was heartbroken. "Okay," I said again, kissing the top of his head and rubbing his side. "Okay." I loved to run barefoot. Running was something I was good at. I liked when my feet ran away. I liked when they cracked and bled from the pressure they felt hammering against the concrete streets. I liked when I was reminded of my sins through the pains of my body. I loved to hurt, but only myself. I loved to hurt myself. No one else had to be hurt by me. I stayed away from people so I wouldn't hurt them. I'd hurt Elizabeth, and I didn't want to. I'm sorry. How could I apologize? How could I fix it? How did one kiss make me remember? She fell down the hill because of me. She could have broken bones. She could have cracked her head open. She could have died. Dead. Jamie, Charlie, I'm so sorry. That night I ran more. I ran through the woods. Fast, faster, hard, harder. Go, Triss. Run. My feet bled. My heart cried, slamming against my ribcage over and over again, rocking my mind, poisoning my thoughts as buried memories began to resurface. She could have died. It would have been my fault. I would have caused it. Charlie, Jamie. No, I pushed them down. I fell into the pain racing through my chest. The pain was nice. It was welcomed. I deserved to hurt. No one else. Only me. I'm so sorry, Elizabeth. My feet hurt, my heart hurt. It all hurt. The pain felt scary, dangerous, real. It felt good. It felt so damn good in such an ugly way. God, I loved it. I loved it so much. I fucking love the hurt. The night grew darker. I sat in my shed, trying to figure out a way to apologize to her without her finding the need to be my friend. People like her didn't need people like me complicating their lives. People like me didn't deserve friends. Her kiss, though. Her kiss made me remember. It had felt good to remember for a moment, but then I'd ruined it, because that's what I did. I couldn't get the image of Elizabeth falling down the hill out of my mind. What the hell was wrong with me? Maybe I always ended up hurting people. Maybe that was why I lost everything I cared about. But I was only trying to get her to stop talking to me so I could avoid her getting hurt. I shouldn't have kissed her. But I wanted to kiss her. I needed to kiss her. I was selfish. I didn't leave my shed until the moon was high above me. As I stepped out, I paused and listened to the sound of giggling. It was coming from the woods. I should have left it alone. I should have minded my own business. But instead, I follow the sound to find Elizabeth stumbling through the woods, laughing to herself with her fingers wrapped around a bottle of tequila. She was pretty. And by pretty, I meant the beautiful kind of pretty. The kind of beautiful pretty that was effortless and didn't take much upkeep. Her blonde hair had loose waves, and she wore a yellow dress that looked almost as if it were made only for her body. I hated that I thought she was the beautiful kind of pretty, because my Jamie had been the same kind of beautiful pretty, too. Elizabeth kind of danced as she stumbled, a drunken waltz of sorts. "What are you doing?" I asked, grabbing her attention. She waltzed my way on her tiptoes and placed her hands on my chest. "Hi, stormy eyes." "Hi, brown eyes." She laughed again, snorting this time. She was wasted. "Brown eyes, I like that." She bopped my nose. "Do you know how to be funny? You always seem so unfunny, but I bet you can be funny. Say something funny." "Something funny." She laughed, loud, almost annoyingly so. But it wasn't. It wasn't annoying at all. "I like you, and I have no clue why, Mr. Scrooge. When you kissed me, it reminded me of my husband, which is stupid because you're nothing like him. Stephen was sweet, almost sickeningly so. He always took care of me and held me and loved me. And when he kissed me, he meant it. When he pulled away from kisses, he always moved in for another. And another, like he always wanted me against him. But you, stormy eyes, when you pulled away from the kiss, you looked at me as if I was disgusting. You made me want to cry, because you're mean." She stumbled backward, almost falling to the ground until my arms wrapped around her waist, pulling her to a standing position. "Well, at least you caught me this time," she smirked. My gut twitched when I saw the bruise against her cheek and the cut from her fall earlier. "You're drunk." "No, I'm happy. Can't you tell that I'm happy? I'm displaying all the happy signals. I'm smiling, I'm laughing, I'm drinking and dancing merrily. That's what happy people do, Tristan," she said, poking me in the chest. "Happy people dance." "Is that so?" "Yes. I wouldn't expect you to understand, but I'll try to explain." She kept slurring her words. She stepped back, took a swig from the tequila, and started to dance again. "Because when you're drunk and dancing, nothing else matters. You're twirling, 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 and the air gets lighter, the sadness gets quieter, and you forget what it feels like to feel for a while."
"What happens when you stop?"
"Oh, see, that's the one tiny problem with dancing. Because when you stop moving..."
Her feet froze and she released the glass bottle from her hand, sending it crashing to the ground.
"Everything shatters."
"You're not as happy as you say you are," I said.
"That's only because I stopped dancing."
Tears fell from her eyes, and she started lowering herself to the broken glass. I stepped in, stopping her. "I'll get it."
"Your feet are bleeding," she said. "Did the bottle cut you?"
I looked down at my feet, bruised and battered from my run. "No."
"Well, then you just have really unfortunate, ugly feet."
I almost smiled. She definitely frowned.
"I'm not feeling too good, Stormy Eyes."
"Yeah, well, you drank enough tequila for a small army. Come on, I'll get you some water." She nodded once, before bending over and vomiting all over my feet. "Or, you know, just throw up on me." She giggled as she wiped her hand against her mouth.
"I think that's karma for you being rude to me. Now we're even."
Well, that seemed fair enough. I carried her back to my house right after the vomit incident. After I washed my feet in the hottest water known to mankind, I found her sitting on my living room couch, staring around at my place. Her eyes were still heavily drunk.
"Your house is boring and dirty and dark."
"I'm glad you like what I've done with the place."
"You know, you could use my lawnmower for your yard," she offered. "Unless you were going for the whole beast's palace before he met beauty thing."
I couldn't give two shits about my yard looking a certain way.
"Why's that?"
because unlike some, I could care less what my neighbors think of me. She giggled. That means you care what people think. What you meant was you couldn't care less what they thought. That's what I said. She kept giggling. That's not what you said. God, you're annoying and beautiful. Well, I couldn't care less what people think of me. She huffed. Liar? That's not a lie. Yes, it is. She nodded before biting her bottom lip. Because everyone cares what others think. Everybody cares about the opinions of others. That's why I haven't even been able to tell my best friend that I find my neighbor highly attractive, even though he's an asshole. Because widows aren't supposed to feel any kind of feelings for anyone anymore. You're just supposed to be sad all the time. But not too sad, because that makes other people super uncomfortable. So the idea of kissing someone and feeling it between your thighs and finding that the butterflies still exist, that's a problem. Because people would judge me, and I don't want to be judged because I care what they think. I leaned in closer to her. I say, fuck it. If you think your neighbor, Mr. Jensen, is hot, so be it. I know he's like 100 years old, but I've seen him do yoga in his front yard before, so I totally get your attraction to him. I think I've even had a tingling between my legs for the dude. She burst out into a fit of laughter. He's not exactly the neighbor I was referring to. I nodded. I knew. Her legs crossed and she sat up straight. Do you have any wine? Do I seem like the type to have wine? No. She shook her head. You seem like the type who drinks the darkest, thickest kind of beer that grows hair on your chest. Exactly. Okay, I'll take a hairy chest beer, please, she said. I walked out of the room and returned with a glass of water. Here, drink up. She reached for the glass, but her hand landed against my forearm, and she left it there as she studied my tattoos. They're all children's books. Her fingernail traced Charlotte's Web. Your son's favorites? I nodded. How old are you? She asked. 33. You? 28. And how old was your son when he... 8, I said coldly as her lips turned down. That's not fair. Life isn't fair. Nobody ever said it was. Yeah, but we still all hope it is. She kept her eyes on the tattoos, traveling up to Katniss Everdeen's bow and arrow. Sometimes I hear you, you know? Sometimes I hear you shouting in your sleep at night. Sometimes I hear you cry. Can I tell you a secret? Yes. Everyone in town expects me to be the same girl I was before Stephen died. But I don't know how to be that girl anymore. Death changes things. It changes everything. I'm sorry I called you a monster. It's okay. How? How is that okay? Because that's how death changed me. It made me a monster. She pulled me closer, making me kneel in front of her. Her fingers ran through my hair and she stared deep into my eyes. You're probably going to be mean to me again tomorrow, aren't you? Yes. I thought so. But I won't mean it. I thought that too. Her finger ran against my cheek. You're beautiful. You're a beautiful, broken kind of monster. My finger grazed against her bruised face. Does it hurt? I felt worse pain. I'm so sorry, Elizabeth. My friends call me Liz, but you made it pretty clear that we are not friends. I don't know how to be a friend anymore, I whispered. She closed her eyes and placed her forehead to mine. I'm really good at being a friend. If you ever want me to, I can give you a few pointers. She sighed, lightly pressing her lips to my cheek. Tristan? Yes. You kissed me earlier. I did. But why? She asked. My fingers moved to the back of her neck, and I slowly pulled her closer to me. Because you're beautiful. You're a beautiful, broken kind of woman. She smiled wide, and her body shook slightly. Tristan? Yes. I'm going to throw up again. Her head had been in the toilet for over an hour now, and I stood behind her, holding her hair up. "Drink some water," I said, handing her the glass sitting on the sink. She sat back and took a few sips. "Normally I'm better at this drinking thing." "We've all had these kind of nights." "I just wanted to forget for a while, to let go of everything." "Trust me," I said, sitting across from her. "I know what that's like. How are you feeling?" "Dizzy, silly, stupid. Sorry about, you know, vomiting on your toes." I smirked. "Karma, I guess." Was that a smile? Did Tristan Cole just smile at me? "Don't get used to it," I joked. "Dang it, too bad. It's kind of nice." She went to stand up and I followed her movements. "Your smile was the highlight of my day." "What was your dark moment of the day?" I asked. "Your frown?" She exhaled as her eyes locked with mine. "I should get going, but thank you for controlling my drunkenness." "I'm sorry," I said, with a thickness in my throat. "I'm sorry for making you fall earlier." She pressed her fingers to her lips. "It's okay. I already forgave you." She headed back toward her house, much more sober, but still moving on her tiptoes. I made sure she made it inside the house before I headed to bed. When we both got to our bedrooms, we took a few moments to stand by our windows and stare at each other. "You felt it too, didn't you?" she whispered across to me, speaking of our kiss. I didn't reply, but yeah, I felt it.
Chapter 12. Elizabeth. That night, after Tristan and I left our windowsills, I lay down in my bed, still a little tipsy, and I imagined him and his wife. I imagined what she'd been like. I wondered if she'd smelled like roses or lilies. I wondered if she'd been a cook or a baker. I wondered how much he loved her. I imagined her with him, and for a moment, I even pretended that I heard her whisper she loved him against his thick beard. I felt his fingers pulling her closer, the gentle touch to her spine as she curved into his body, the way she called out his name. "Tristan." My hand glided against my neck, and I pretended it was her neck he was touching. He warmed her up without saying a word. He loved her quietly with his hands. His fingers trailed down her neck, and she moaned as he reached the curve of her breasts. "Tristan." My breaths picked up as I felt him taste her skin, his tongue gliding from his mouth and slowly licking her nipple before he placed it between his lips and sucked, nibbled, massaged. She was surrendering herself to him. "Tristan." My hands moved lower across my skin as Tristan filled my mind. He lowered her panties as I lowered mine. His hand glided between her pulsing thighs as I slowly slid a finger inside myself. I gasped, almost surprised by the feeling Tristan brought to me, my thumb massaging my clit as I kept imagining. But she was gone now. It was only him and me. His rough beard brushed against my stomach before his tongue danced around my belly button. I moaned slightly, feeling another finger slip into me. His fingers moved faster, fell deeper, and pushed harder as he worked me up to a sweat. I whispered his name as he owned mine, and when I felt his tongue taste me, I was seconds away from losing myself to him. My hips thrust against his tongue, my lips begged for more, and he gave me more, faster, deeper, harder, caringly, gently, forcefully. "Oh my God, Tristan." My mouth parted, and I pumped my fingers faster, feeling myself hanging from the cliff of forever and moments away from falling into the depths of never. He fed my imagination. He rocked my insides. He begged for me to come apart against his lips. And I did. I collapsed with his touch inside me and released with a feeling of bliss, unable to remember the last time I'd been able to feel alive. "I'm good. I'm good. I'm so fucking good." And then I opened my eyes,
and saw the darkness of my bedroom. My hand slid from between my thighs. My panties moved back up my legs, and the feeling of bliss dissipated. I'm not good. I looked over to Stephen's side of the bed, and a level of disgust filled me from inside. For a moment, I swore I saw him lying beside me, staring my way with confusion. I blinked once and reached out to touch him, but he was gone. Because he'd never really been there. What did I just do? How could I do such a thing? What is the matter with me? Pulling myself up from the sheets, I headed to the bathroom and turned on the shower. I stepped inside with my bra and panties still on, and I fell to the ground as the water washed over me. I begged the water droplets to drag my guilt down the drain, to make the disappointment I'd been feeling leave my body, but it didn't. The shower rained over me, mixing with my own tears, and I stayed there until the water ran cold. I shivered in the tub and closed my eyes. I'd never felt so alone. Chapter 13. Elizabeth. Despite Tanner's protests, I chose to keep having Tristan come to care for the lawn. Every Saturday he would come over, cut the grass, and head into town to work with Mr. Henson. Sometimes he worked in the mornings, other times late into the night. We hadn't spoken since my drunken night, but I thought that was all right. Emma always played with Zeus in the front yard as I sat on the porch reading a romance novel. Even when your heart was hurting, there was something so hopeful about reading a book filled with love. The pages were somewhat of a reminder that maybe one day I would be okay again. Maybe one day I would be all right. Each week I tried to give Tristan money, but he declined it. Each week I invited him to stay for a meal, and each week he said no. One Saturday he arrived right as Emma was in the middle of an emotional breakdown, and he stood at a distance, trying his best not to interrupt.
"No, Mama, we have to go back. Daddy doesn't know where we are,"
Emma cried.
"I'm sure he does, baby. I think we just have to wait a little while. Give Daddy time." "No, he never takes this long. There's no feathers. We have to go back,"
she hollered as I tried to pull her into a hug, but she yanked away from me and hurried into the house. I sighed, and when I looked up to Tristan, I saw his scowl. I shrugged my shoulders.
"Kids,"
I smiled. He kept his grimacing look. He turned to walk back toward his house.
"Where are you going?"
"Home."
"What? Why?"
"I'm not going to sit out here and listen to your damn kid whine all morning."
Mean Tristan was back in full force.
"God, sometimes I start to make believe that you're a decent person, but then you just go ahead and remind me of how much of a jerk you are."
He didn't reply, but disappeared once more into his darkened home.
"Mama!"
The next morning, I was awakened to a hyper Emma bouncing up and down on my bed.
"Mama, it's Daddy! He came!"
she screamed, pulling me up to a sitting position.
"What?"
I muttered, rubbing the sleep from my eyes.
"Emma, we sleep in on Sundays, remember? But Mama, he showed up!"
she exclaimed. I sat up straighter when I heard a lawnmower outside. Tossing on a pair of sweatpants and a tank top, I followed my excited girl to the front of the house. When we stepped outside, a small gasp left my lips as I stared at the porch, which was covered with white feathers.
"See, Mama, he found us!"
My hands covered my mouth as I stared at the white feathers that were starting to float around the space from the bursts of wind.
"Don't cry, Mama. Daddy's here. You said he would find us, and he did,"
Emma explained. I smiled.
"Of course, honey. Mama's just happy, that's all."
Emma started picking up the feathers and smiled.
"Picture?"
she asked. I hurried inside to get Stephen's old Polaroid camera to take the usual picture of Emma holding the feather for her Daddy and Me box. When I came back, Emma was sitting on the porch with her bright smile and dozens of feathers surrounding her.
"Okay, say cheese."
"Cheese!"
she screamed. The picture printed out, and Emma ran inside to add it to her collection. My eyes looked out to Tristan, who was cutting the grass as if he had no clue what was happening. Walking over to him, I shut off the lawnmower. "Thank you," I said.
"I don't know what the hell you're talking about."
"Tristan, thank you." He rolled his eyes.
"Can you just let me be?"
He went to turn it back on, but I placed my hand over his. His hands were warm, rough but warm. "Thank you." When our eyes locked, I felt his touch grow even warmer. He smiled a true smile, a smile I hadn't known his lips were capable of creating.
"It's no big deal. I found the freaking feathers in Mr. Henson's shop. It didn't take much work."
He paused.
"She's good,"
he said, gesturing toward the house, speaking of Emma.
"She's a good kid. Annoying as all get out, but she's good."
"Stay for breakfast?" I asked. He shook his head. "Stop by for lunch." He declined. "Dinner?" He bit his bottom lip. He glanced down to the ground, debating my request. When our eyes met again, I almost fell over from the single word he spoke.
"Okay."
The neighbors all gossiped about what it meant, me having Tristan work on my lawn, but I was slowly starting to care less and less what others thought of me. I sat on the porch, surrounded by the feathers as he finished the lawn work. Emma played fetch with Zeus. And every now and then, Tristan remembered how to smile. We sat down at the dinner table, Emma yapping away about a dead bug she found on the porch that Zeus ate. She was being extra loud and extra messy with her spaghetti. I sat at the head of the table, and Tristan sat at the other end. Every now and then I would catch him staring my way, but most of the time he was smiling out of the corner of his mouth at Emma. And Zeus went chomp, like it was the best thing ever. Now he has bug guts in his teeth.
"Did you eat the bugs too?"
Tristan asked. "Ew, no, that's gross."
"I hear they are a great source of protein."
"I don't care, Tick, that's gross." She made a gagging face, making us all laugh. "Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ah," she said, transitioning into her gorilla speech. For weeks now, she'd been exploring her gorilla roots after watching Tarzan. I wasn't sure how to explain it to Tristan, but within seconds, I understood that I wouldn't have to.
"Ooh,"
Tristan responded.
"Ah, ah, ah."
He smirked. I wondered if he knew that he made my heart skip a few beats that day. "All right, Jane of the Jungle. I think it's time for you to go pick out some pajamas for tonight. It's getting past your bedtime." "But," she started to complain. "No buts," I smirked, nodding her out of the room. "Okay, but can I watch Hotel Transylvania in my room?" "Only if you promise to fall asleep." "Promise." She hurried off, and as she left, Tristan stood up from his chair. I stood with him. He nodded once.
"Thanks for dinner."
"You're welcome." "You don't have to go. I have wine." He hesitated. "There's beer, too." That pulled him in. I kept myself from telling him that the only reason I'd bought beer was in hopes that one night he would stay for dinner. After I put Emma to bed, Tristan and I took our drinks outside and sat on the front porch, with Zeus sleeping beside us. Every now and then, one of the feathers would get picked up by a gust of wind and blow past us. He didn't talk a lot, but I was growing used to that fact. Being quiet with him was kind of nice. "I was thinking of ways I can pay you back for helping me with my lawn work."
"I don't need your money."
"I know, but, well, I can help you with your house, with the interior," I offered. I went on to tell him that I'd gone to school for interior design and that it only made sense for me to help him out. His house always seemed so dark, and I loved the idea of adding a bit more life to it.
"No."
"Just think about it," I said.
"No."
"Are you always so hard-headed?"
"No."
He paused and smiled a bit.
"Yes."
"Can I ask you a question?" I wondered out loud. He turned my way and nodded. "What is it you listen to?"
With those headphones?
Nothing,
he replied. Nothing?
The batteries died months ago, and I haven't found the nerve to change them yet.
But what were you listening to? His thumb landed between his teeth, and he bit it gently.
Jamie and Charlie. A few years ago, they recorded themselves singing, and I just held on to the tape.
Why haven't you changed the batteries yet? His voice lowered.
I think hearing them again will kill me, and I'm already pretty much dead.
I'm so sorry.
Not your fault.
I know, but still, I am sorry. But I can't help but think, if I had a chance to hear Stephen's voice one more time, I would take it.
Tell me about him.
He whispered, which surprised me. He didn't seem the type to care, but any opportunity I could find to talk about Stephen, I took. I didn't want to forget him any time soon. That night, we stayed on that porch remembering. He told me all about Jamie and her silly humor, and I invited him into my heart to meet my Stephen. There were stretches that passed where we didn't speak, and that seemed perfect, too. Tristan was broken in all the same places I was shattered, yet even more so because he lost his wife and son. No parent should ever have to lose their child. It seemed like such a hideous kind of hell. So I have to ask, the wand on your pointer finger, what book is that?
Harry Potter,
he answered matter-of-factly. Oh, I've never read those books.
You've never read Harry Potter?
Tristan asked me, his eyes wide with concern. I chuckled. I'm sorry, is that some kind of issue? He looked at me as bewildered as possible, and he was definitely silently judging me.
No, it's just, you always have a book in your hand, and it's insane that you've never read Harry Potter. It was Charlie's favorite. I believe that there are two things that exist in the world that everyone should read because they teach you pretty much everything you need to know about life. The Bible and Harry Potter.
Really? Those are the only two things?
Yep, that's it. That's all you need. And well, I haven't read the Bible, but it's on my to-do list.
He snickered.
That's probably part of the reason I'm currently failing at life.
Every time he laughed, a part of me came back to life. I've read the Bible, but not Harry Potter, so maybe we can give each other the Cliff's Notes versions.
You've read the Bible?
Yes.
The whole way through?
Yes. Holding my hair up in a ponytail, I turned so he could see the three cross tattoos behind my left ear. When I was younger, my mom used to date and ditch a lot of guys. At one point, I really thought she was going to settle down with this one guy named Jason. I loved him. He always brought me candy and stuff. He was a really religious guy, and Mama told me that if she and I read the Bible, then maybe he would love us and would be my new dad. He even moved in with us for a little while. So for weeks, I sat in my bedroom reading the Bible, and one day I came running into the living room shouting, "Jason, Jason, I did it, I read the Bible." I was shaking with excitement because I wanted that, you know? I wanted a chance to have another dad, even though mine was the best. In my mind, if I had a new dad, then maybe my mama would be my mama again, instead of someone I hardly knew anymore.
What happened with Jason?
I frowned. When I got to the living room, I saw him loading his suitcases into the back of his Honda. Mama said he wasn't the one and had to leave. I remember getting so mad at her, screaming, crying, wondering why she would do that, why she would mess it up. But that's what Mama does. She screws things up. Tristan shrugged.
It seems like she did a decent job with you.
Minus the lack of me reading Harry Potter.
Your mom should date a wizard next time.
I laughed. Trust me, it's probably next in her lineup. Around 3 a.m., he stood to leave, and I hurried inside, bringing out a pair of AA batteries for his cassette player. He hesitated at first, but then placed them into his player. As he walked across the lawn with Zeus, he hit play on the music, placing the headphones over his ears. I watched him drop to his knees,
where he covered his face with the palms of his hands. I dropped down to my knees, watching the suffering that engulfed his spirit. A part of me wished I hadn't given him the batteries, but another part was happy that I had, because his reaction meant he was still breathing. Sometimes, the hardest part of existing without your loved ones was remembering how to breathe.
Chapter 14. Tristan. April 4th, 2014. 3 days until goodbye.
"This one's really nice if you're looking for something strong," the funeral home director, Harold, said to my mother and me as we stood staring at caskets. "It's full copper, which has excellent resistance to corrosion. It's stronger than stainless steel and provides a remarkable life for your loved ones."
"That's very nice," Mom said as I stood completely uninterested.
"And over here, if you're looking for something a bit higher class, then you want to look into this beauty."
Harold's fingers brushed against his goatee before he patted the inside of another casket.
"This is solid bronze, which is the strongest and longest-lasting of any casket material. If you're looking to send your loved ones out in style, this is the way to go. There's also the option of the hardwood caskets. Now, they aren't as strong as these ones, but they are shock-resistant, which is nice. They come in different types of hardwood, such as cherry, oak, ash, or walnut. Now, my personal favorite is the cherry finish, but that's just me."
"Fucking creep," I muttered under my breath, my mom the only one to hear me.
"Tristan,"
she scolded, turning away from the funeral director.
"Be nice.
He has a favorite casket. It's fucking weird," I hissed, irritated with Harold, irritated with my mother, irritated that Jamie and Charlie were gone. "Can we get this over with?" I complained, looking into the empty caskets that would soon enough be filled with my everythings.
"Come back to me."
Mom frowned, but went ahead and handled the details that I wanted to pretend didn't exist. Harold took us to his office, where he wore his creepy smile and talked about shit that annoyed me as each moment passed.
"For the tombstones, we also offer wreaths for the holiday season, vases for flowers, and blankets for the colder months."
"Are you shitting me?" I murmured. Mom placed a comforting hand on my shoulder, almost as if to stop me from snapping on Harold, but it was too late. I was far too gone.
"It must be really nice for you, huh, Harold?" I asked, leaning forward with my eyes narrowed and my fingers laced together.
"It must be a good fucking job to offer sad fucks blankets for their loved ones. To get them to pour all their money into stupid shit that doesn't matter because they were in a vulnerable state. A blanket? A blanket? They're fucking dead, Harold," I shouted, standing up from the chair. "The dead don't need blankets because they don't get cold. They don't need wreaths because they don't celebrate Christmas. And they don't need flowers because what's the point?" I hollered, slamming my hands against his desk, sending papers flying. Mom stood up and reached for me, but I yanked my arm away. My chest rose and fell, my breaths becoming harder and harder to control, and I could feel the wildness that was living within my eyes. I was losing it. I was falling apart more and more as each second passed. I rushed out of his office and leaned my back against the closest wall. Mom apologized to Harold as my hands formed fists and began to slam against the wall behind me. Over and over again, I slammed my fists against the wall. My fingers were turning red and my heart was turning cold as it all began to set in. They were gone. They were gone. My mom walked out of the room and stood across from me, her eyes filled with tears.
"Did you get the blanket?" I asked sarcastically.
"Tristan," she whispered, the heartbreak audible within her soft words.
"If you did, you should have gotten Charlie a green one and Jamie purple. Those are their favorite colors."
I shook my head, not wanting to talk anymore, not wanting Mom to try to make me feel better, not wanting to breathe. It was the first day that their deaths felt real. The first day I came to the realization that in 3 days, I would have to say my final goodbye to my world. My soul was in flames and every inch of me felt the burn. I shook my head more and more, cupped my hands over my mouth, and howled into my sadness. They were gone. They were gone.
back to me. Charlie! I screamed, sitting up in my bed. It was still pitch black outside, and my sheets were soaked in my own sweat. A slight breeze passed through my window as I tried to shake off the nightmare that was more real than ever before. My nightmares were my past memories that came to haunt me. I watched as a light turned on across at Elizabeth's house. She walked over to the window and glanced my way. I didn't turn on my light. I sat on the edge of my bed, my body still burning hot. The light flooded over her face, and I watched her lips move. "Are you okay?" she questioned, crossing her arms against her body. She was so damn beautiful, and it annoyed me. It also annoyed me that my shouts probably awakened her almost every night. I walked over to the window, my eyes still heavy with the guilt of not being there for Jamie and Charlie. "Go to sleep," I told her. "Okay," she replied. But she didn't move to her bed. She sat on the ledge of her windowsill, and I leaned against mine. We stared at one another until my heartbeat slowed and her eyes faded shut. I silently thanked her for not leaving me alone.
Chapter 15. Elizabeth. "Rumor has it you're banging an asshole," Faye said over the phone a few days after I'd sat up with Tristan after his nightmare. I hadn't spoken to him since then, but I couldn't stop thinking about him. "Oh my gosh, that is not a rumor." "No, but it sounds more exciting than Tanner whining about some dude cutting your grass, even though I remember offering you a certain guy named Ed to trim your bushes. But really, though, are you okay? Should I be worrying like Tanner is?" "I'm fine. Because that Tristan guy is a total dick, Liz." The worry on the end of each of her words was sad. I hated that she was worrying about me. "I can talk to him," I said quietly. "About Stephen, I can talk to him."
"You can talk to me about him, too."
"Yeah, I know, but it's different. Tristan lost his wife and son." Faye went silent for a moment.
"I didn't know that." "I doubt anyone does. People mainly judge him from the outside, I think."
"Listen, Liz, I'm just going to be uncool for a second, because sometimes being a best friend means being truthful even when your bestie doesn't want to hear it. It's sad, really, about Tristan's family, but how do we know we can trust this guy? What if he made that story up?"
"What?
He didn't.
How do you know?"
"Because his eyes are haunted the same way mine are. Please don't worry, Faye."
"Honey."
Faye sighed into the phone receiver. For a second, I contemplated hanging up on her, something I would have never done in the past.
"You just got back into town a few weeks ago, and I know you're hurting. But this Tristan guy, he's mean. He's wild. And I think what you need is more stability in your life. Have you thought about talking to a therapist or something?"
"No."
"Why not?"
"Because therapists were supposed to help you move on, and I didn't want to move on. I yearned to go backwards."
"Look, I gotta get going. We'll talk later, okay?"
"Liz, bye, Faye. I love you,"
I said, and meant it, even though I didn't like her very much right then.
"Love you, too."
When I hung up, I went to the front window of the house and watched as the darkened skies started rolling in. A rainstorm was building right in front of me. Such a large part of me was excited for the rain, too, because the rain meant the grass would grow faster, and that meant broken Tristan would be here again, standing right in front of broken Liz. Saturday evening, I couldn't have been happier sitting and watching Tristan cut the grass. I sat on the front porch with Mama's heart-shaped tin box of love letters, going through all the words I'd already read millions of times. When Tanner's car pulled up toward my house, I placed the letters back into the box and shoved them to the corner of the porch. A weird sense of embarrassment washed over me, knowing that Tanner was about to see Tristan cutting the grass. As his engine turned off and Tanner hopped out of his car, I gave him a tight smile and stood up.
"What brings you around here, buddy?"
I asked. His eyes instantly locked on Tristan, and he frowned.
"Just was driving around after work and thought I would see if you and Emma wanted to grab some dinner or something."